Hello and welcome to Indie Business Radio for Monday, July 28, 2008. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Before we jump into the meat of today's show, I want to share some exciting news with you. Along with another Indie Beauty Network member, Anne Marie Fayola, I am scheduled to meet with staffers on Capitol Hill next week on August the 5th. We are going to be advocating against the FDA Globalization Act of 2008, and I am so excited. Our letter was sent last week to Congress, and we are off to Capitol Hill to make sure that small business voices are heard loud and clear. If you have not signed our petition, please visit indiebusinessblog.com and click on the category for FDA Globalization. You'll see the video and the petition there. You can sign it by leaving your comment. And then you can join us after our congressional meetings for my next Indies in the City in Washington, D.C. Check the blog category for Indies in the City to find out more. Well, you know, I am all about helping indie businesses grow, and there are so many exciting ways to do that these days. Email newsletters, blogs, podcasts, YouTube pages, MySpace pages, lots of different social networking mechanisms that we can use to expand awareness about the products and services that we offer, and I have covered all of those on Indie Business Radio. But recently, I thought about how I hadn't covered another one that I think is very significant, and that is the topic of white papers. And we have got on today's show the white paper guru of the universe right here to break it all down for us so we can understand it and apply it to our businesses. Michael Stelzner is the author of Writing White Papers, How to Capture Readers and Keep Them Engaged. He is one of the leading authorities on the topic of writing and marketing white papers. He's written more than 100 white papers for many of the world's most recognized companies, including Microsoft, FedEx, Motorola, and Hewlett-Packard. Michael is the executive editor of the 20,000-reader White Paper Source newsletter, and you can visit writingwhitepapers.com and sign up for his newsletter and take a look at his blog and also get the book. But right now, we're going to be picking his brain big time. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna Maria. I really appreciate it.
Well, tell me, Michael, just a little bit about your background. How did you find your way into your own business? I'm assuming at some point you had what we like to call here on Indie Business Radio, like a real job, maybe with a corner office, corporate kind of thing. How did you end up as the white paper guru that you are today?
Well, it all started, I was working in a real job, and I was working for a pretty fast-growing company, and I was, at the Christmas banquet, the president called me up and said, "You're one of the best people we've ever hired in the history of our company." 4 months later, I was quickly terminated. And it turned out the boss thought, for whatever reason, that I had seen him and his hidden drug problem, but indeed I never did. But the fact that I was let go opened me up to a world of opportunity that I hadn't, I would have never had any other way had I not been wrongfully terminated. So I went out about 14 years ago to start my own business pretty much as a writer, and things were going along really great. I was mostly targeting high-tech businesses, and then around 2001, 2002, guess what happened? Tech market crashed, the dot-com explosion happened, and pretty much everybody in the high-tech world stopped purchasing the types of services that I was offering. So my wife had just had our first child. She was like, I don't know, about 4 or 5 months old at the time, and I pretty much freaked out, not knowing what to do, because I had a really successful business, and then all of a sudden things dried up significantly. So I did something kind of crazy, and I decided to give away some of my intellectual knowledge. And what I did was I wrote a piece called How to Write a White Paper, a White Paper on White Papers, and it pretty much gave away some of my secrets. And the analogy here was that I wanted to be like, when you go to a trade show, you know how sometimes the people giving away the free T-shirts get everybody flocking to their booth?
Right, right.
So the concept was to give away some great, valuable, free knowledge in the hope that I would attract certain people. And I sent this paper off to my editor, and she said, "Are you crazy? Are you nuts? What you're doing is just empowering your competition to copy you." And I said, "Well, I think I'm onto something." And I put this paper out there. I did a little Google pay-per-click advertising, and on the first day I had 4 people register for the paper, which is pretty phenomenal for day one.
Right.
By the end of the first week, I had 40 people. by the end of the first month, I had 600 people. Now, I'd never had 600 people actually fill out a form and give me their name and their phone number and their email address ever, even over a period of a year. And I knew I was onto something. By the end of the first year, I had 4,000 people. By the end of the second year, I had 10. By the end of the third year, I had 16,000 people. And fast forward to today, I've had 60,000 people request a copy of that paper. And it has really transformed my business, and it's led to a book. It's led to a newsletter with 20,000 readers. It's led to speaking engagements around the country and training at major universities and corporations. And pretty much it opened up the whole world for me. So by simply giving away something that was ultra valuable, it did the opposite of what my editor thought. Instead of having my competition essentially copy me, it propelled me to that number one slot in the world that I was in, and it allowed me to basically not have to worry too much about where the food is coming from, you know. And now people just pretty much wait to work with me, and it's really an amazing thing, that all because I wrote this one little paper. And
well,
you can find it, by the way, by just searching white paper on Google. Sorry, go ahead, Donna Marie.
No, that's okay. We want to make sure everybody knows how to get to it. That's a pretty easy and memorable way if you search on white paper. If we could
it comes up number two.
Anyway, listen, I want my listeners to know that if they have a question about white papers, they can call and ask you directly or make some comments. 800-773-0355 is the number. So, Michael, tell me, what is the difference between a white paper and a free online book or informational brochure?
Well, a white paper helps people make decisions, and those decisions could be something as simple as downloading something on the Internet, or they could be something as complex as investing in some new technology or process, or just about a $1 million investment, just about anything in between. So what differentiates it is a good white paper is very educational. It does not actually talk about your product or service explicitly. I like to describe it as a crossbreed between a brochure and an article. And if you think about a brochure has really salesy kind of, here's why my product is great, here's why you should buy it. And articles tend to be a little bit more educational and informative. So the good white paper has a little bit of both. So it's highly educational, yet it sells kind of under the radar.
And so it focuses on delivering content to the reader and not sales jargon.
Yeah, and not just any content, but content that's specifically targeted to some sort of an issue or problem that's faced by that reader that you're going after.
So if, for example, you have an organic cosmetic line, a lot of my listeners are in the cosmetics industry, so, and this is just, again, a broad example. You have an organic cosmetic line. You might write a white paper having to do with the benefits of green living, trends towards green living, and maybe eliminating chemicals from your cosmetics or something like that.
Yeah, or maybe you might want to write a piece that says 10 things you probably don't know about the cosmetics you're currently using. You know what I mean? Or or did you know, trying to be green? Well, then don't buy Estee Lauder or something. You know what I mean? And and it could be educating people on the value proposition of, what's the problem? The problem is they want to be green, or the challenge or need is that they want to be green, but they don't even realize that perhaps what they're currently doing is anti-green. And you could make the case as to why certain kinds of products are and are not, and maybe even what to look for when you're shopping for these kinds of products.
So how long does a white paper have to be? I'm trying to figure out if there's some sort of qualifying factor that turns an informational e-book or one-pager from one of those into a white paper. Is it just what you call it?
It has to do with the content more than what you call it. And frankly, I have seen, in certain industries, I've seen the word white paper tacked onto things that are like a one-page advertisement and things that are a book. So there's a lot of confusion and misconception. What I tell everybody is that you need to provide enough valuable information to attract a reader, because ultimately you're going to be using this as a marketing tool. And it's also often, by the way, these white papers are typically used by people that are researching or looking to learn information or looking for some new way of doing things, for example. And because typically they're used for people that are perhaps in the early stages of making a decision, there has to be that kind of information that they would find valuable. For example, you might want to talk about trends in the industry. you might want to talk about a little bit of history. Perhaps it's the history of how cosmetics have changed or when green cosmetics came into be. You might want to talk about some of the challenges, perhaps, that can relate to your ideal person. Like, by the way, would these cosmetics people be selling directly to consumers, or would they be selling to stores, Donna Maria?
They would be selling to, well, it depends. Some have wholesale and retail customers. That is, they sell directly on the Internet as well as to spas and stores. So it kind of varies. But I get, are you saying that you can kind of target your message or your white paper to one of those audiences, and then if you do all three, you can have three white papers?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely, because if you're trying to sell to a spa, for example, you could come up with a paper that talks about how most of the stuff in the spa isn't really, quote-unquote,
right,
natural or green or something along those lines. And if you're trying to sell to a consumer, it's a different angle. It's more like why you should abandon the current way you're buying your cosmetics, and or maybe perhaps, you know, some of the advantages to purchasing direct from manufacturers and getting rid of the middleman. But the moral of the story is there has to be something that is perceived to be valuable to the reader.
Right.
And what I tell everyone is the key to white papers is, and let me back up for a second, everybody has a problem, and it's that they don't have any time. And this is complicated by the fact that if you think about your personal life, you're probably getting your cell phone ringing off the hook, your emails are coming in every 5 minutes, you've got instant messaging applications, you've got Twitter, you've got Facebook, you've got your desktop phone ringing off the hook, you might have kids hanging on you, you might have people standing outside your door if you're in an office. 10,000 disruptions, and this is a very disruptive society. So when you produce a piece of marketing collateral, for example, how is it that thing is going to stand out when we live in such a disruptive society? And how is it that anyone's going to actually take any time to read something that's got of any substance in it if they have very little time? Because we live in a very headline news society where everybody wants to get, you know, their information in quick little bursts. So the moral of the story is the solution to the problem is to provide something that's perceived to be of great value to the reader. And when you do that, like in the case of my piece called How to Write a White Paper, people that are searching for how to write white papers, it's perfect. It's hitting them right where their need is.
Right.
And when you provide something that's considered to be valuable to them, what will happen? They will give it time. They will give you respect because you have given them something that's considered of great value. And the hope is that they will also give you consideration when it comes time to making a decision, like a purchase or, you know, adding your line to their existing store. So the key to the whole thing is providing value, and it takes time to provide value. And to your original question, that means you're going to have to lay it out in writing. And that means that it's going to take more than a page. It's going to take more than a couple of pages. Most white papers are 4 to about 10 pages in length.
If good. And that's not out of the realm of possibility at all.
Yeah. No, it's totally doable. It's just a question of, like, making sure what you have in there is of great value to the reader.
Well, hopefully anybody that's been in business for any period of time, it does have the kind of experience and expertise that is needed to produce this kind of work. And do you find, Michael, that a lot of people, small business owners particularly, sort of sell themselves a little bit short when it comes to thinking of themselves as experienced enough or quote unquote expert enough to produce a white paper that would sell to other people?
It's a big challenge because, as you know, a small business owner is wearing 10,000 hats.
Right.
You're the marketing, operations, sales, everything. So a lot of people that are small business owners sometimes are so closely ingrained in the message that they have to actually step out of their comfort zone a little bit and just think to themselves, okay, how do I go about doing this? And
uh-huh.
A lot of people just physically leave their office with a clipboard uh-huh. and follow some of the stuff that I talk about in my blog and in my book, and it actually isn't really all that hard, but it is sometimes useful. I tell small business owners to get on the phone with customers, you know, and talk to them, because sometimes you're so close to the thing that you do that you believe you know it all, but in reality you do not. And I think it's important to really talk to people that are your peers. It's important to talk to people that are your customers, because they're going to help you understand perhaps some things that you may not have ever considered. For example, when I wrote my book, I mean, there's really hardly anybody that probably knows as much about what I'm talking about than me, but I still, so I'm the quote-unquote expert, but I still talk to my peers and interview them. Why? Because they think differently than I do, and they added new insights that I would have never thought about writing about had I not talked to them.
Well, and you know, one of the more valuable things about your blog, too, for people to check out at writingwhitepapers.com is, where there's a link to the blog at the top, is that you communicate with other white paper experts, so to speak, about different points of view when it comes to white papers. And we're going to talk a little bit about that after our first break. This afternoon, I'm here with Michael Stelzner, the author of Writing White Papers, How to Capture Readers and Keep Them Engaged. This is Indie Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. I'm here this afternoon with my guest, Michael Stelzner, the author of Writing White Papers. Before we took our break, Michael, you had done such an eloquent job of describing the need to be as focused and educational as possible when it comes to your white paper. So can you tell us a little bit now, Michael, about the real nitty-gritty differences between a white paper and some of the other great marketing tools like e-books and online newsletters that people can use?
Sure. Yeah, so the e-book is probably the closest cousin to the white paper, and the difference typically between the e-book is it tends to be a little, especially a lot of the e-books you see posted on blogs by experts and stuff, a lot of these e-books tend to be very long treatises or essentially like 18, 20-page documents that talk about concepts or ideas. Now, there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. They're just kind of slightly different than a white paper. The other thing to keep in mind is that ebooks often are landscape. If you think about, you know, when you're in Microsoft Word and you set up your page format, you can do portrait or landscape. Well, ebooks are often formatted on their side, so the long side of the page goes across the bottom, and white papers are formatted just like your typical Word document, and most people say that's really the only difference. But a lot of things that I also notice in ebooks is they tend to be a little bit more graphical. They tend to almost look like fancy brochures, and I think they're very, very powerful. But the one thing about a white paper that sets it apart is it's known in the business world especially as a very powerful marketing tool, very powerful lead generation tool. What a lot of people do with an ebook is they will actually provide a sample of the ebook, and then they'll use a little form that asks for like a name and an email address. And they'll use it to either grow their list, for example, to grow their list of newsletter or blog subscribers. They'll use it as a free bonus, for example, sometimes when someone purchases something like an online resource. But a lot of times they'll just use it to generate leads, which is a way to capture a name and an email address, and they'll couple that white paper with some sort of an online advertising campaign or offline advertising campaign where they'll have a little starburst that says, get our free white paper on, you know, 10 reasons why you probably don't have green beauty products or whatever you want to call it. And they'll just use that to grow a very big list or to have this people that they can actually call and start selling to. And you know that's one of the hardest things today is to find new opportunity, and white papers are lead magnets, and there's been tons of studies that show that they're extremely effective. As a matter of fact, I think it was Marketing Profs or Marketing Sherpa did a study that showed that 85% of marketing professionals acknowledge white papers as one of the most powerful lead generation vehicles, period. Better than newsletters, better than webinars, better than online advertising, just about everything else that's out there.
Michael, is it safe to say that for someone that is doing business selling consumer products, that a white paper would be more likely to be beneficial in the terms you just described if it's directed at other businesses. So, for example, a manufacturer of cosmetics selling products to spas as opposed to selling them directly to consumers.
It depends. The moral of the story is you want to use a white paper if you have something that is complex to sell, or if you want to introduce a new idea that's perhaps never been thought about before, or something that's really expensive.
Okay.
But I'll give you a case example. I did a job for a company called Vistaprint, which many of the people listening today are probably familiar with. Very inexpensive business card company, okay? And it was called How to Market Your Business on a Shoestring Budget. And the whole concept of the paper was that you, too, as a dog groomer or a small business owner, can do marketing even though you don't have a lot of money to do it. And it was all sorts of innovative ideas and strategies about how it could be done, using the kinds of products that Vistaprint had. But we didn't reveal that Vistaprint even made these products until the very end of the piece. And at the very end of the piece, we had an offer, get your free 250 business cards.
Uh-huh.
And Vistaprint was able to get 5,000 individuals to request a copy of this paper within 60 days. And 10% of those people turned into paying customers in 60 days.
Really? So, after they got their free business cards, they came back to buy something?
10% of the 5,000, so 500 people actually became customers that spent money with Vistaprint, yes.
And the cost to produce it in dollars was next to nothing.
It cost them money to hire me, but that was the extent of it. Yeah, I mean, they could have.
Well, if someone doesn't hire you, though, it's pretty much an investment.
It's your time, yeah. It's just your time.
Okay, and so you can also. I'm assuming that they added those people or requested that those people be added to a newsletter so that they could, or email contact sheet or whatever.
Oh yeah, all those people went on their newsletter. All 5,000 of those people, exactly.
Okay, so this is so important because what you just said was. Their business is in selling, you know, business cards, brochures, and printed marketing materials. But the name of the white paper wasn't, you know, why you should buy your marketing materials from us or why we have the best products. It was how to do something that their customers needed to know how to do well.
Exactly. And that's the moral of the story. And this is where it works well for consumers. If consumers are trying to understand how to do something, like mine was how to write a white paper, theirs was how to market your business on a shoestring budget.
Right.
If you can find that key point that your consumers really are not sure about or they're researching or they want to learn how to do, and you can find that issue that you can solve,
mm-hmm.
and you can position your paper in such a way that you're providing a lot of great, valuable content to them, and at the end you say, oh, by the way, we sell this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see how that powerful that is? It's kind of like you're giving them...
It goes back to what you said earlier about staying in touch with your customers because they're the ones who tell you what their problems are or why they're at your place of business in the first place.
Exactly. SurveyMonkey is a powerful tool, by the way. I don't know if anybody's ever used it, but if you want to understand what some of the challenges are, you can go to SurveyMonkey.com and set up a free little survey account with them, and then you could send an email out and you could ask people what's the number one problem that you see today with blah, and then all the responses that come back, that can be fodder for your paper.
And so if you want to sort of expand on that and translate it into a white paper, again, this hypothetical cosmetics business that sells products to spas and retail stores, then you basically just take the content and reformat it and you know, come up with the problems that retailers have in terms of maybe selling products to consumers. Like I would think that a wholesale cosmetics manufacturer, a good white paper suggestion would be, for example, tailored for spas or retail stores, how to make your, off-the-street walk-in customers buy more stuff.
There you go. Or how about a paper that just talks about the fact that gas is high and people aren't getting out as much, a way to bring in regular repeat customers. The new way to bring in regular repeat customers, and then you could draw parallel industries into the hair salon industry and how they have special shampoo that you can only get at the hair salon. Do you follow where I'm going with this?
Yeah.
And you could just talk about the challenges today, which with the increasing cost of gas and the decrease in the economy, you know, and the challenge to become profitable, and then bada boom, you introduce these new special kind of product that you can only get at your spa. And you can see how that could really, you put yourself in the position of that spa owner, and now all of a sudden you've got yourself a interested prospect there that could lead to some opportunity.
Now, I have spent a considerable amount of time at your blog, which is very informative, and I like it a lot. And one of the things, I can't remember whether this was I read this at your blog, Michael, or someone who had commented at your blog about white papers, was someone had mentioned that it's very difficult, or more difficult, should I say, to actually track the sales of products from white papers than it is, like, the sale of services. Now, I guess your Vistaprint example kind of blows that out of the water.
Well, actually, I think I read that, and I think that was somebody else that was writing a post that might have referenced back to my blog. I don't agree that it's hard to track at all. As a matter of fact, it's relatively easy to track. There's technologies that allow you to do some pretty amazing things. For example, in your white paper, at the very end of your white paper, you could offer a special that only people in the white paper would know about, and you could put a special link or URL on there, and you could put tracking technology in place just to see how many hits you get on that, like myblog.com. or mysite.com/special, and then you could just track how many people are hitting on that. You could have a phone number to call, and you could have a very specific something for them to reference that would allow you to track it back to that. But the fact is, they're digital documents, and, you know, electronic and digital documents are highly trackable. But the good news is they're also very easy to go viral, which is really oftentimes more important. You kind of want that paper to get legs and start getting passed around and referred by other bloggers, and before you know it, everybody's talking about it. That viral nature of the piece is pretty powerful. But white papers are very trackable.
Michael, how long has the term white paper been, you know, been actually used?
Since about the 1800s, believe it or not.
Okay, so, you know, one of the things I'm wondering is, you know, I was telling people that this was going to be the topic of today's show, and, of course, we booked you several months ago, so a lot of people I've talked with about it, and one of the things they were like, well, what's a white paper? And these are, like, successful business owners who have a newsletter, who have a
it's
blog.
It's a very common question. I mean, I can tell you why they call it a white paper. I mean, back in Parliament in the United Kingdom, you imagine a bunch of attorneys coming together to argue law. When they had to get a case to the floor, they would normally bind it up in a hardcover book format. But when they were in a rush, they would wrap it in white paper, and thus the white paper was actually the description of the exterior binding of these legal arguments.
Okay.
And if you think about a legal argument, you're presenting evidence, you're making a case, it's very similar to a white paper today.
Right, lots of white paper there.
Lots of white paper. Yes, and today, you know, and they got their, in the technology world, they were very popular in the 80s and 90s, and nowadays they're pretty much the number one lead generation vehicle in the business world. They're not as known in the B2C world, and that's probably why a lot of people that you're talking to may not be familiar with the terminology.
And B2C being business to consumer?
Exactly. Okay. And maybe even among some of the smaller niche marketplaces, like I'm seeing it moving its way into real estate and into finance. It's still in the large businesses. It's still in the tech world. But just because it's not well-known doesn't mean its sisters aren't well-known. You're totally familiar with the free report. You're familiar with guides. You're familiar with guides and free reports and e-books can follow the exact same model that I've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And that I'll continue to talk about today. You just maybe don't call it a white paper. There's nothing wrong with labeling it something different.
Okay.
We didn't call that Vistaprint one a white paper. We called it a free guide.
Okay.
But it was really a white paper.
Okay, so we're not going to get stuck on the terminology.
No.
Okay, so we really need to focus on the fact that it's not salesy, it's educational, it's focused, and it's no longer than somewhere around 10 pages.
Exactly, and it's the content that matters, not the label.
Okay.
But right. But it depends on the market. If you're in a certain industry that knows what a white paper is, it'd be advantageous to call it what it is.
Right, like maybe if you're an attorney, might call it a white paper and make it really, really long.
Yeah, or if you're trying to get into high tech or something where it's really known, you know. And it's not about the length. It's, you know, the label is kind of irrelevant. It's really more the content of what makes a powerful marketing tool that we're talking about today.
You know, let's talk about that for a second. Okay, it's more about the content. We hear this all the time. Content is king. Content is queen. Without content, your business dies. I mean, what are your thoughts on continually providing just new content over and over again as it concerns being able to not really even just grow a business and, you know, make it worth multi-millions of dollars, but just kind of for, you know, just to sustain a business and to have it have some organic growth. Is it really important to produce that kind of content on a regular basis?
Here's the good news. It isn't. And I know this sounds counterintuitive, but remember that paper I told you I wrote back in 2002? The only thing I changed is the copyright date. I still get 50 to 100 people every single day that come to me asking for a copy of that piece.
Because so, it's relevant. It's timeless. It's relevant.
It's timeless. That's right. So the moral of the story is you could write a single, well-written white paper that could literally last you for years and get yourself out of the grind of having to constantly reinvent yourself and come up with great content. Now, I'm an avid blogger. Don't get me wrong, okay? And I love writing, but I know a lot of people listening don't. So you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You can just write a great white paper, market it appropriately, and it can literally work for years. And it can become pretty much a salesperson on wheels for you and can generate tons of revenue for your business. And I've seen tons of businesses that have one or two white papers, and that's all they're using as their primary marketing vehicle as a small business owner, and they're exceptionally successful.
This is Indie Business Radio. We're talking to Michael Stelzner, the author of Writing White Papers, How to Capture Readers and Keep Them Engaged. If you have a question you'd like to ask, you can feel free to give us a call, 800-773-0355. We're going to take our last break, and when we come back, Michael is going to share with us the elements of a white paper. So get out your pen and your white paper and get ready to take some notes. This is Indie Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. We're talking to Michael Stelzner, the author of Writing White Papers. Michael, one of the things that you mentioned to me in our email exchange getting ready for the show is that you really feel that over the course of the next several years, and the demand for white papers is going to continue to increase. And why do you think that is?
Well, there's really a couple reasons. Number one, kind of what I alluded to earlier, it's becoming much more difficult in this internet age to stand out as a business person because what used to be very easy because you had special access to a regional marketplace, for example, is now completely opened up. The entire world is your competition now because of the internet. So the fact is that there are so many ways for people to find out to find competitors' products and to find very similar information. You have to really try harder to stand out as a business, and lots of other businesses are understanding this, and they are turning to these educational resources as white papers because they are a very powerful way to stand out. And that's really the main reason why we're seeing so much growth in this industry. The other thing is that the economy slowing is also forcing businesses to refocus on their marketing efforts. When things are going great, you can sneeze and be successful as a marketer. But when things aren't going well, you actually have to force yourself to look for something that is going to be successful. And this is one great way to do it because everybody hates being sold to. And these white papers, they don't sell overtly, they sell covertly, and it's a very powerful tool. And when the economy is down, it's just been a proven powerful marketing tool. So the slowing economy combined with the need to stand out in a very noisy world are two main reasons why white papers are growing in popularity, and I don't think they're going to stop anytime soon, frankly.
And Michael, you have not noticed at all that you're giving away this information over the objections of your editor has adversely impacted your business?
Absolutely not. I mean, as a matter of fact, just to give you some perspective, my current clients that I'm working on projects for right now include LinkedIn.com, Business Objects. Who else am I working with?
These are companies that you're helping them write their white paper.
GoToMarket.com. These are companies that have contacted me out of the blue as a result of this paper.
Just currently. a really good point, because those companies employ people who can write, right? And they've hired you to write for them.
That's right. And the moral of the story is, these are not small. I mean, these are big companies, and of course, you guys are, a lot of people listening are small companies, but the moral of the story is, these companies are on the edge. Like, LinkedIn is a very, you know, on the edge kind of a company, and they see the value in these types of things. I think there's more reason for you to see the value as well.
Right.
But so yeah, no, honestly, it has not negatively impacted. It's only helped my business in every way.
And it's so interesting that you sort of takes us back to the top of the show where you said you lost a job, you had a new baby, you wrote a white paper.
Right.
Turned your whole life around.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's not the gospel, but...
Well, you know, there's something to be said for that, too. But from a business perspective, I just want people to, and listeners to understand that, you know, this is not an exercise in futility. That, it, you know, there's lots of things that we, your radio shows, you know, and read papers and do this, do that, your business is going to grow. But I really want to drive home the point that there is a way to do it, and you're sharing some of the tips to do that, and you can use this and get some results.
And I'll be honest with you, this may sound crazy, but you can do this and little else and still have results. You don't have to do it all. Mm-hmm. I'm one of those kind of guys that does it all, but I know a lot of my peers, a lot of people that I've taught over the years have successfully just done what we're talking about and nothing else and been very successful, because it's radically different than the way of thinking of a lot of their competitors. A lot of the competitors are just constantly blowing money on advertising and traditional ways of doing things, and this is one way that's super effective and very attractive to people, and you can just do this and find great success.
Right, and your white paper essentially asks the question, you know, in preparing for it, you ask your customers, how can I help you, and then you write that down in a white paper and you deliver it.
Exactly.
So what are the elements of a white paper? Let's say we know what our focus is. We know who our target audience for the white paper is going to be. What are the elements of a white paper?
Well, let's just take the topic of time management, okay? Everybody has a problem with it, so you'll be able to relate. Step number one would be to talk about trends in the industry. So what are some trends going on? And you might cite some interesting little something that you read on a blog or by some third-party source, like someone who's reputable.
Right.
And you just cite that something that says that, for example, 50% of bloggers are reducing their online blogs, you know, to 1 to 2 posts a week from 5 posts a week. And it's only going to get worse. And the reason why? Well, copy blogger Brian Clark, number 20 blogger in the world, says, we just don't have time. Do you follow where I'm going with this?
Right.
And it's only
going to
get worse. So you start by talking about trends in the industry, which tells the reader this is where the world is going. And in the cosmetics world, you could talk about the trends going green, for example. And then the next step is to talk about problems. And we talked about this earlier. What are the top 2 to 3 problems that your ideal reader, that person that you're trying to target, that spa owner, is facing? And you identify what those problems are. And as a small business owner, they might be, I have too much to do and not enough time to do it. Number two might be, I want to spend more time with my family and less time operating my business. And you could just build these problems out, talk about what happens when these problems exist, and then hint at the fact that there's some new time management technology that's come out that's going to help you solve this problem. Then step number three, after you talk about trends and you talk about history, is to talk about, I mean, trends and problems, is to talk about history. Historically, how have small business owners gone about managing their time? In the olden days, it was a day runner. You know, and around the year 2000, email became the main way people managed their business, and more recently, and you could draw a technological evolution, you know? And today, it's absolute chaos, you know? And then you introduce what the solution is generically. And Donna Maria, this is the key to everything. When I say generically, instead of saying the solution is Acme's time management solution, instead you say something that's a little more conceptual. And let me give you an example. Let's say your niece had to hang a picture on the wall. Uh-huh. Would you tell her to go get a hammer and nails, or would you tell her to go get a 21-ounce fiberglass hammer with a magnetic nail start and a zinc-plated finishing nail? You'd tell her to go get a hammer and nails because people need to understand conceptually what the solution to their problem is before they can understand specifically what they should purchase, right?
Okay.
So the moral of the story is, if you're selling cosmetics, you shouldn't say you should get this very specific line of cosmetics that has these kinds of ingredients right off the bat. Instead, you should just introduce the concept, like green cosmetics. What are green cosmetics? And you define what they are. You talk about the benefits of them, which everybody wants to know what's in it for them. Maybe you give an example of how it is that they work or why they're more efficient than the alternative. And then my silver bullet is top 10 things to look for when you're shopping for this kind of solution.
Okay.
And this is where you can lay out, when you're shopping for green cosmetics, make sure the cosmetics have these kinds of capabilities, or make sure the company that delivers them has these kinds of capabilities. And this is where you actually ask yourself, what do we do that no one else in the world does? And we'll fabricate that into a list of questions, which the reader will find great value in. But what this does is, after the reader reads this and becomes educated, he or she goes out and shops your competition. This pulls them right back to you because nobody else does what's on that list but you. Do you follow where I'm going with this?
Yeah, that's great. So trends, problems, history, and solutions.
Yeah, and then generic solution. And then finally, specifically, you reveal the Wizard of Oz, the company behind the curtain, is Donna Maria's cosmetic stuff.
Right.
And you talk about why, you say we meet all the requirements outlined in this paper, and if you want to learn a little bit more, here's a compelling reason to go to my website to find out more information.
That's great. Now, why wouldn't problems come before trends at the beginning?
Because people care more about trends sometimes than they do problems, especially if it's known from a reputable source. What's the really, is there a major publication in your world, Donna Maria?
Mine, the Indie Experience Weekly Newsletter.
Okay, so let's say that that's known to spas, okay?
Or
let's just say that there's a spa monthly magazine, okay? And it's really known amongst the spa folks, okay? Spa Monthly magazine says that by the year 2011, 90% of spas will be needing to sell other products other than just massages. Do you follow where I'm going with this?
That would be a perfect way. I see what you're saying.
So the idea is, it's not you saying it, it's a reputable third party. And
you
the reason
some
people care about trends, go ahead.
You boost your credibility first.
Exactly, right out of the gate. And you get people to see that they got to jump on a bandwagon. And then once they jump on the bandwagon, then you talk about some problems, which builds affinity with them and gets them to say, oh, I want to keep reading. These guys are talking about stuff I can totally relate to. And then when they read the problem section, they're like, oh, my gosh, I'm behind the times. I didn't realize it, you know?
This was written just for me.
Exactly. And then finally, you reveal the solution in such a way that it's like a spoonful of sugar. It goes right down because it doesn't come off as too salesy. It comes off as very educational. And all that stuff draws them closer to the end destination, which is hopefully that they're going to purchase your product.
Now, Michael, what is a story of someone who did white papers the wrong way? Don't use any names, of course, but give us some examples of what not to do when you prepare your white paper.
Well, try not to be humorous, and I know it sounds crazy, but we've got a captive audience of people that are, especially if we were in a live room together, I could tell a joke and hardly anyone would leave the room, but because white papers are PDF documents and because people have the attention span of a flea, they will abandon immediately if they don't find it of interest and compelling and humorous, just something to avoid, especially considering people tend to use these to kind of help them make decisions. Don't talk about yourself or your company right out of the gate. Do everything you can to save that for the last page of the paper. What that means is you don't mention any trademarked or branded terms that your company has until the last page of the white paper. That forces you to really talk about things generically or agnostically, and when you talk about the solution and its benefit, you're really talking about yourself. You're just not doing it in an obvious way.
So it forces you to actually focus on the information that you're delivering and not the reason why you ultimately want to do it.
Exactly. And one other thing that a lot of people get wrong is they just start free-form writing and they don't even think about who their ideal target is. I like to build a profile for my ideal reader. And just to give you an example, I'm grabbing one right here. Listen to this. Our ideal reader is the director of talent acquisition or recruiting at a large company with 50 or more on-staff recruiters that are attempting to fill senior hard-to-fill roles. This director is mid-30s to 50s, analytical, skeptical, super busy, a know-it-all, seeking new ways to recruit, and doesn't know quite a bit about the topic we're going to be talking about.
Well, that's very specific.
When you build a very specific profile like that, and if you can add to it, like, for example, generally female, then you can actually visualize a person in your mind when you're writing, and you can say, is what I'm writing going to resonate with this person? And if it isn't, then you don't write about it. And that really is one mistake most people do, is they don't think about anybody other than themselves. And when you start thinking about that ideal person, then it's a great litmus test for everything that you write to make sure it's going to resonate.
That's really good. So even before you get to writing the trends and history and all the elements, you really have to know who you're writing it for.
Absolutely.
And if you're not sure,
you need to talk to somebody who knows.
Right. And you may find out based on if you use SurveyMonkey like you suggested or use the feedback, however you get it from your customers and your audience, you may find there's more than one white paper there. So you may have to split things up and just not try to throw everything into one publication.
That's right. I mean, if you try to do it all in one paper, what will happen is you'll not resonate with any one in particular.
It'll be fragmented.
That's right.
And that's where the attention span of the flea comes in. If it's fragmented, they go away.
Exactly. But if it's really specific to me as a spa owner, like you might want to do one for spas, and you might want to do one for, I don't know what, other than spas, like, you know, who knows.
Moms who buy baby products for their babies.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. One for moms, one for spas, one for hair salons, who knows, you know, I mean, but they're different audiences who have different problems, and
right.
Really identifying those problems is key to the whole thing. Everything spins around the nucleus of the problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I just thought of a good one. If you manufacture products, I talk with members about this all the time, you're looking for a new market. Corporate gifting is a great way to explore things, especially if you're in a city where you're surrounded by a bunch of, you know, corporate offices and things of that nature. You could write a white paper to help those companies be able to deliver in an efficient way gifts to their employees for their birthdays or whatever.
Yeah, and specifically, you'd be targeting the human resources person probably, and you want to find out that that person, you'll probably find out that person is generally female, 35 to 45, and, you know, some of the problems you might talk about is that, mm-hmm. that the employees don't feel like they're pampered enough, you know.
Yeah. I remember when I used to work in a law firm, one of the attorneys there, when I was an attorney, we would always get flowers from the best flower shop in town. And it was so great because we felt so special, but we knew we were like on a list somewhere and she wasn't even, the office administrator would walk in my office, oh, it's your birthday? But, you know, she didn't really have to do anything, but it made me feel so special. So that's just as a suggestion. I mean, and these ideas, you really don't have to think that hard if you know your product, you know who buys them, you can come up with a lot of different alternatives and really just pick the best one to get started with, the strongest one.
Absolutely.
So, Michael, tell us a little bit. We're going to have to wrap up here. I want you to tell us a little bit about where we can go to learn more about you and your services. Are you going to be speaking? Are you going to be giving any teleseminars? Where can we find more about White Papers and Michael Stelzner?
Well, if you go to whitepapersource.com /teleclass, TELECLASS. I teach monthly classes on how to do all the exact types of things we're talking about, and a lot of them have a marketing slant to them. As a matter of fact, in a couple weeks, myself and two of my peers are going to be talking about standards in the industry, and then the following month, we're going to have David Merman Scott on, and we're going to be talking about the new rules of PR and how to use white papers and public relations strategies to really get a lot of exposure. So we have a whole slew of different classes. You can also sign up for our free newsletter there. And it's a monthly newsletter. We typically have about 4 articles per edition that's totally focused on how to create and market these kinds of things we've been talking about today.
Well, thank you for all this great information you've provided, Michael. I think I'm certainly inspired to put together a white paper, and I know there's lots of business owners out there listening to the show that are as well. Whitepapersource.com to get more information about Michael Stelzner, his book, his teleclasses, and where you can go to get his expert assistance if you need it to prepare your own white paper. Next week, we've got David Merman Scott coming up. He's going to be talking about the new world PR. How can you use it to your advantage without going broke? We're going to be talking about all the ways that marketing and journalism and traditional media have changed and how you can take advantage of it without breaking the bank. And then later on August 11th, we've got Larry Weber, author of Marketing to the Social Web. He's going to be joining me to talk about why and how we need to incorporate digital socialization into our marketing plan. Lots more guests coming up. It's August, but I'm not going to be taking a break. I'm going to be right here with you delivering all the content you need to build your indie business. I look forward to seeing you next week when we'll have David Merman Scott on to talk about the new world PR. In the meantime, this is Donna Maria signing off. Enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.